3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders, past and present, of the Kulin Nation. We recognize their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double. Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to the Monday Breakfast Show here on 3CR Community Radio for Monday, the 8th of June 2026. Joined today with me, Rob, is Hannah. Good morning, Hannah.
Hello.
It's very cold, and we're ready to present to you 90 minutes of radical left content.
Yeah, we are.
Hope everyone has had a really good weekend. It was nice to have a little tiny bit of reprieve from the rain over the weekend because it was a very wet week. Was it Wednesday or Thursday? It was like 40 mil of rain. I think it was Thursday.
Yeah.
It was wild. So hopefully everybody was, managed to fit in time to wash their sheets and stuff. I remember on Thursday night I was panicking because I wanted fresh bed sheets and I was like, it's going to rain for like the next 3 days. Are we?
Yeah, doing washing right now.
So they went to the laundromat, Hannah, and like all of the washing machines were being used but none of the dryers. So then I had to drive back to my house and then wash the sheets. Oh. Like this is like after work. So I was just like really annoyed that I was just like, who uses all of, like, there wasn't an equal amount of, my gripe one. Was there wasn't an equal amount of washers to dryers. Like, why is there like 17 dryers and only like 5 washing machines? That's so weird.
I always take my wet washing to the laundromat.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Expensive. Yeah, it was $6 for half an hour.
Yeah.
In a dryer.
I went to the laundromat the other day and it's because I spilled my whole water bottle on my bed and didn't notice. And then I saw that there was just a massive wet patch in the middle of my bed. And they were like freshly cleaned sheets too.
So yeah.
And then I like went under the first blanket. It was really wet underneath. Went under the doona. Really wet underneath. Went under the weighted blanket. Really, it's like soaked through everything.
That's and so I was impressive, like, actually.
I'm just going to go to the laundromat and I'm going to put them in the dryer.
Yeah,
and
just
it's going to be great.
That.
And it'll be fine. And I was like, I'll be back in like 20 minutes to home, telling myself. And then I like put it in the dryer and I just sat in my car for 20 minutes. And then I went back into the dryer and I put my weighted blanket in there. And I'm pretty sure the weighted blanket like pushed the door open. And so the dryer had like stopped and it was all still wet and they were like kind of half on the ground. I think it was my weighted blanket. And then so I was like, okay, I'll just dry it again. It's fine, whatever.
So did you
the
have
exact
to pay twice?
Same thing. Yes. Well, not twice. And then I like did the same thing, put on the dryer, sat in my car for 20 minutes. Clearly, I don't learn. And then the same thing happened. I went back in. The dryer door was open. Everything was on the ground. It was still wet. I did it 3 times. I didn't learn my lesson times. Anyway, I spent like 2 hours at the laundromat. I think I spent like
that's too much time.
$20-something.
That's disgusting. You should write to them and be like, where's the accommodations for the neurodivergent people?
That don't learn their lesson.
We need to dry our weighted blankets in the dryers. That's discrimination.
Yeah, the way that I did made the same mistake 3 times that I didn't learn.
I love that.
It's ridiculous. I was talking
you
to my
You got
partner.
Better things to worry about, Hannah. You got better things to worry about.
Something
like your
God,
radio so show.
Yes. Sunday night panicked.
Just quickly before I'll do a quick rundown, but I do have something funny to tell you after the rundown.
Oh my God, I remember that.
So obviously we're going to be starting off with a segment from Out of the Blue, provided to us by Tessa. And this is a story about the Guildford Big Tree Community Day, That's happening at around 7:15 after we stop yapping. At 7:30, Lucia from the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism will be joining us to tell us about an upcoming rally they have against One Nation.
Pauline Hanson and against Barnaby Pauline Joyce Hanson coming.
And Barnaby Joyce.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's happening on Friday, and that interview is happening at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
If we have time, we will also be playing a segment from back in 2020, from In Your Face in 2020, in which host James McKenzie speaks with Adam Carr, who was a founding journalist of the Gay and Lesbian Press back in 1979. And yeah, I found it really interesting to listen to how reporting of the outbreak initially went of HIV and AIDS went here in so-called Melbourne, and what it was like being a specifically gay journalist and activist in that space. So potentially we'll be playing that at 7:45 if we have time. At 8 o'clock, we'll be speaking with Gia and Celeste, who are two organizers of this organizing group called Amplexus. And they are organizing something called a Blood Rave, which is raising money to sustain the organizing committee themselves. But in future, they will be, and in the past, they have organized events to raise money for community, like Camp Sovereignty and et cetera. So they'll be speaking with us about at 8 a.m. about this upcoming rave. And the show is going to end with an interview about data centers and why we should protest against them. That's at 8:15, hey?
Yes.
Okay, cool. The thing I wanted to tell you, Hannah, is that, and I don't know if you're going to find this funny, but I found out last week that Elon Musk, so Elon Musk bought Twitter, 2 years ago?
I feel like it was longer than
3 years ago, and an amount of time ago, okay. And last week, it's sort of like over that time, people have been like, why did he do this? Like, why did this man who owns a car company and a rocket company and is kind of a bit weird buy Twitter? Like, why did he do that for $44 billion, right? And it turns out, and he's now admitted it last week on this podcast, that he bought it because Twitter was so staunch on censoring people who would misgender and dox trans people,
mm-hmm.
specifically Elon Musk's trans daughter. So he spent $44 billion because he is upset that his daughter is trans.
Yeah. yes, I did know that, actually.
Oh, no. Okay, well.
I'm so sorry.
Let's do our headlines now. Stay tuned.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Now.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. These are the news headlines for Monday, the 8th of June. Early last week, China announced that it would send a team of medical experts to the Democratic Republic of Congo as the African nation battles its Ebola outbreak. Additionally, China will also provide assistance to the African Union Commission and help bolster the epidemic prevention and control with support to the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The World Health Organization has declared that the situation in the DRC is a public health emergency of international concern. The organization's chief, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said the outbreak may have started as early as January. However, he said, quote, under the leadership of the DRC government, we are catching up, end quote, with scaled-up lab and diagnostic testing. The Global Health Organization's chief also said that the travel restrictions imposed by Western nations, such as the US and Canada, were, quote, disrupting supply chains and hindering the response, end quote, to the outbreak. And they were introduced back in May. According to the state's health ministry, there have been 452 confirmed cases of Ebola across the DRC since May.
Also in news this week, Australia's complicity in Israel's genocide in Gaza is growing, paired with the laws preventing speech at pro-Palestine rallies and the bomb release mechanisms on F-35 jets. Australia is now manufacturing raw explosives that end up inside the bombs falling on Gaza, Lebanon, and Iran. Two factories, one in New South Wales and one in Victoria, are manufacturing munitions that end up inside the shells, bullets, missiles, and bombs used by Israel. An inside source told The Shot, saying, quote, the Australian government knows where the munitions end up. They end up in Israel, end quote. Two of the explosives factories are owned by the Australian government and are leased out to Thales. Thales signed a $1.1 million deal to operate the facilities for the next 10 years. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 8th of June, 2026, and you're listening to 3CR Community Radio.
Yeah, your station, your voice.
Palestine is not just the land of the Muslims. It's the land of three people and all people. The land of the Muslims, the land of the Christians, and the land of the Jews who are decent and not Zionist Jews. When we say from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, that does not mean that we are going to get rid of the Jews from that land. We are saying there's going to be one state of Palestine, the historic Palestine, where the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims can live side by side peacefully.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now. Step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
You're You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR 855 AM. First up, we're going to be bringing you a segment from the lovely Tessa from the Out of the Blue show that she put together. This is a story about the Guildford Big Tree Community Day. Stay tuned.
The town of Guildford in central Victoria is not much more than a smattering of houses on the side of the Midland Highway. There's a post office, a cricket pitch, an old town hall and a corner store. And apart from the sound of cars passing through to Castlemaine in the north or to Daylesford in the south, oftentimes it's pretty quiet here. But today is different. Today, hundreds of people have come to pay a visit to Guildford's oldest resident, who lives tucked up behind the tennis courts, just up from the Loddon River.
This tree is just majestic.
The size, the story, yeah, the
animals that live in it.
Possums, there's fescagales.
I have seen bees in the tree.
And we've seen cockatoos, crows, magpies.
It's just like a grandfather or grandmother tree in that it provides habitat for so many different critters.
You know, your great, great, sitting below your great, great, great ancestor, grandmother, grandfather. And I don't know, soaking in some of the wisdom maybe.
The huge old River Red Gum, or Bial in the Dja-Dja-Wurrung language, has been a gathering place for a long, long time. Squinting up against the sunshine and looking into the branches of the upper canopy, Dja-Dja-Wurrung elder Uncle Rick Nelson points out where the branches have been joined together, forming a huge loop of living wood.
The tree has got a grafted ring in it. That's like a cultural marker. So the tree is over 700 years old, and it was recorded that Aboriginal people were camped around here when the first Europeans came here. And that makes sense, since the Loddon River is only just over there, and 70% of camps are found near water. So it makes sense that the local mob would be camped around the 700-year-old tree.
But today is not only about celebrating the tree's life, it's about honouring loss. In February 2024, a huge part of the tree, including several of her limbs, snapped off and fell to the ground. One of the people who remembers that day is Camillo DiMarco.
People call me Cam, Uruguayan man living here on Jarrah country, and my role has been around this Guildford Bial project, around making it happen really. So yeah, I remember the morning that I dropped a big limb, and Uncle Rick rang me and said, this has happened, we need to go down there. So I went and picked him up, brought him down here, and there was people had gathered, some other elders, Auntie Julie, Uncle Ron Murray, Auntie Kerry came.
The amount of fescagales that came out of the branch that had fallen and were all scurrying to find new homes. You know, and all you could hear was all of these little critters inside the tree all arguing with each other. You could just imagine someone's just been evicted and they're trying to find a new house, you know, and kicking somebody out of a
house.
Can
I sleep on your couch?
Pretty much, yeah. Kerry Douglas, proud Dja-Dja-Wurrung and Bangarang descendant. I was the first Jarrah person to attend the tree when the branch came down. Friends of mine live right behind the tree, and she called me. She said, the branch has come down. I can hear chainsaws, what do I do? And I said, tell them to stop with the chainsaws, because we don't know what part of the tree has actually come down. We don't know whether there is any cultural significance in the branch that has come down. So we needed to protect that first and foremost.
What would have happened to the wood if it had just been the chainsaws had come? What do you think would have happened otherwise?
As you can see, there is chips at the base of the tree, and that the chipwood at the base of the tree is from smaller branches that have fallen over the years. So they've literally just chipped it up and placed it back here. We couldn't let that happen with the significance of the amount of wood that came down.
And this project all started from that moment, really. So all the wood was taken to be for safekeeping to Jarrah Timbers. And because there's a lot of love for this tree and a lot of relationship with this tree, from Jarrah mob but also local community members, they have a real connection to it. And so there's a sense of a bit of ownership in some ways around, and a lot of questions around what's happening with the wood. And so kind of woke up at 3 a.m. one morning and had an idea to create this project that would create healing and connection through using the wood, making stuff from the wood to bring the community together. So that's what we started. And we drew this picture of the rings of the tree. And with Jara, we put Jara elders at the center of the ring, and then Jara members, and then going out from there, the Aboriginal community, Aboriginal organisations, the broader community as the rings went out. And that was the pathway for how the wood was distributed and shared with the community. And so over the past 2 years, we've been, year and a half, been having workshops with the wood through that process, with that kind of pathway.
In total, 25 tonnes of wood have been recovered from the tree and passed between hundreds of hands as it's been distributed amongst community members. Most of the timber will come together again in an exhibition in Castlemaine on the other side of winter. But today, some of that branch is returning here to the Bial in the form of a giant seat.
We'd like the general public to actually gather on either side of Friars Road. Jara dancers will be coming from the tree. Uncle Rick will be calling us out, so we will come up.
Folk from all over have gathered for a proper ceremony to honour the Bial and to accompany the seat to its final resting place opposite the tree. Crafted into the shape of a koolamin, the seat was made by Uncle Rick Nelson and Pete McCurley from Jara Timbers, with the intention to create a space for reconciliation, as Cam explains.
It's been called the reconciliation seat because the intention of it is to come here and reconcile, whether it be with yourself, your own journey, or with someone else, to reconnect. And as Uncle Rick says, it might be after a dispute or a disconnect that may have happened. And I know I've experienced those disconnects happen in our relationships, they happen in our families, they happen in our workplaces, they happen in our share houses, they happen on the street, they happen in within community organisations, and they happen more broadly than that. So the intention is, when those disputes and those disconnects have happened, to come here and sit on that seat.
And look at the tree.
Yeah. Thanks, Uncle Rick. Yeah. Look at the tree, because sometimes it doesn't need words. Sometimes just two people who've had a disconnect or a dispute, just sitting and looking in the same direction, the same perspective, there's healing in that alone, in silence. This is not just some token thing that Jara and Uncle Rick and Pete have gifted the community. This is a genuine pathway to healing and reconciliation.
Having that kind of glimpse into the depths of time that it would have seen, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then I also feel like we get the sense of responsibility as well, imagining that time further forward in the future. What do you hope to see around this tree into the future?
I know that sooner or later Mother Nature's going to take care of the tree itself, and that she's not going to be here for eternity. But as you can see here at the base of the tree, all those other younger trees are offshoots, they're baby Bials, they're, you know, so whether she's here or not, her legacy is still going to be here. That's the future.
Bloody comfy. Yeah, tell me about the seat. What is it like to sit on it?
I don't know. It feels natural, eh?
Comfy, you can stay here tonight.
Yeah, it feels like you're sitting on country again, huh? This is the same wood, isn't it?
Yeah, this is from the tree.
You feel like you're up in the tree?
No, definitely not.
No, I reckon it feels like you're part of the tree over here.
Is it solid?
Oh, yeah.
Mate, you should have a sit down on it. Have a sit down. Have a sit down.
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
tell us how it feels to sit on the seat, madam.
I think it feels
It's hard to put into words what it feels like to sit on that seat and look up at the Bial, who has seen so much change, so much. She grew surrounded by her kin, surrounded by her people, and then suddenly, violently, the forests were slashed and burned, her river was churned for gold, her people were taken away. But yet she remained, standing in the same place she has always stood, long enough to see her people return again. And so to sit on one of her branches, this seat, this reconciliation seat, an offer of a place to come together and talk out our differences whilst being held by 700 years of time and place, our problems don't seem so insurmountable.
You're just telling the truth and you're telling it like it needs to be told. And we're just so lucky to have 3CR in, we really are.
We really are so lucky to have 3CR and the climate show. It's just so important that we're telling the truth on the climate and ecological emergency, and our actions every day make a difference and you make a difference. I also love that 3CR always turn up on the street with their recorders, and they record the people on the street and give a voice in real time to that place. So I'm ever grateful for 3CR, and if anybody can spare a bit or a lot to donate, we would be ever grateful, and the planet would be ever grateful for you too.
And I don't believe in fighting today in any one front, but on all fronts. In fact, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter.
This country is a nation of thieves.
Now, we're never going to get justice here in these filthy racist courts here.
Our people have been massacred, and we're not supposed to grieve for that. We've got to do something more drastic if we're serious about this.
Move over or we going to move on over you.
Yilliman with Kieran Stewart-Asherton on 3CR dives deep into Indigenous resistance and global anti-colonial struggles. Featuring frontline activists, it confronts Australia's identity, challenges power structures, and fuels revolutionary discourse. Wednesdays, 12 to 1pm.
CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Thank you. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here on 3CR 855 AM. That track you just heard was Anti-Colonial by Ndet. And before that, we were listening to the lovely segment that Tessa from Out of the Blue put together for us about the Guildford Big Tree Community Day. Now the Monday Breakfast Show is joined by Lucia from the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Do you want to tell me about the upcoming protest that CAF is organising this Friday?
So this Friday, for the low price of $2,000, you can have an audience with Pauline Hanson and Barnaby Joyce in Mini Ponds, which is a inner city suburb of Melbourne. They're putting on a fundraiser there to basically attract a bunch of racists to giving them a bunch of money for their campaigns. So CAF, the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism, are putting on a counter rally to say that actually no, racists and One Nation is not welcome in Melbourne, and they're not free to just, you know, fundraise wherever they lie.
Yeah. Do you think that parties like One Nation have risen in popularity in recent years? And, like, why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, they've definitely risen in popularity over the last couple of years, especially the last year. Well, I think it's mainly, like, due to the failure of the Liberal Party, for example. It hasn't been a major party that's taken over since the 1890s, so it's quite unprecedented. And it's basically, a failure of, the Liberal Party in making, you know, a certain section of, capitalism happy. I think as well, you know, Trump being elected into his second term and a rise of far-right major parties in Europe has sort of galvanised quite a few people who want a more brutal, racist kind of capitalism that says, you know, it's might or right. Might is right. That's quite attractive to figures like Barnaby Joyce, like Pauline Hanson. You know, she's been gifted a jet by Gina Rinehart, the richest person in Australia. All of these sort of people are sort of being convinced over to a more aggressive form of conservative politics.
Yeah, and with the rise of far-right politics in general, we saw a potential for Pauline Hanson coming into popular politics back in the 90s, with that quickly being squished by the many protests everywhere that she went. Do you think the same amount of uprise and protest against her would happen again?
Well, that's the hope.
Yeah.
That's the hope, is that, you know, because in the 90s there were, you know, swathes of, you know, high schoolers, students and, you know, workers coming out on the streets to say, you know, we don't want this fucking racist, you know, around.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we want to put on this rally, because we really need a resurgence of that kind of energy from people. And I think, there's quite a few people that are really, quite concerned about the rise of One Nation, and sort of don't really know what to do about it, which is fair enough, because, you know, I mean, there really is no opposition that's being put up to One Nation. It's quite untested at the moment. So in that case, I really encourage people to come to the rally and have their saying be around people who are also, concerned and don't think that, you know, racist politics should have a platform in Australia. We need, people to come out and have their say, even if they haven't been to a protest before. I think they should come.
Yeah, and do you have any other ways that people can prevent the further spread of far-right rhetoric becoming more mainstream than it feels like it is currently?
Oh, that's a tough question. I guess, like, well, I guess we have to, like, actually do something about it. Because I think, like, you know, a lot of the common way to actually, like, address, like racism, sexism, or, you know, oppression is to just, like, curate our own sort of personal morality, you know, and sort of police what we see ourselves or what we say, you know, our friend group says. But I think, like, that's all well and good, but, you know, clearly that hasn't done anything to stop, like, people who have quite a lot of wealth, you know, put their racist vision on society. So actually we need to go out and actually physically, you know, do something about it, meaning coming to protest, maybe going a step further, getting in contact with a campaign like CAF, handing out leaflets, talking through the politics, trying to think, okay, what can we do next and next and next? So I think, like, yeah, figuring out, like, what the root of racism is, which in my opinion is, like, this sick system, and trying to figure out a way to totally dismantle it.
Mm. And would you be able to remind listeners on when and where this upcoming rally is and how people can get involved?
Yeah, so it's this Friday at 5:45 p.m. In Mini Ponds. Just, like, rock up to the Mini Ponds tram junction and you'll hear the sound of chanting and drums.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming on to the show today, and I'll see you on Friday.
Great. Thank you so much. See you then.
Thanks so much.
Have you heard it on the news about this fascist group thing? Evil men with racist views spreading all across the land.
They're pulling on the boots in Brazil and wiping off the eggshells in Moorabbin. Fascism's on the march, and we say, yeah, nah.
Yen Up Us Iran is a new weekly program on 3CR dedicated to tracking this rise in Australia, Aotearoa, and all around our increasingly warm little globe.
Every Thursday at 4:30 p.m, we'll be talking to writers and fighters about some angry blighters.
Brothers, sisters, we don't need that fascist group thing.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
I don't like it. When you vote One Nation out, my language has been murdered. My language has been murdered. My shopping trolley murdered. My groceries just gone. I don't like it. When you've turned my voice about, I don't like it. When you vote One Nation out, my language has been murdered. My language has been murdered. My shopping trolley murdered. My groceries just gone. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, racist, rubbish, racist, hate. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, racist, rubbish, racist, feel the heat. I don't like it when railway lines are white. I don't like it when day becomes night. My language has been murdered. My language has been murdered. My shopping trolley murdered. My groceries just gone. I don't like it. No, 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 I don't. Never did. I don't like it. I don't like anything. I don't like it. No.
anything.
Please explain.
Why can't my blood be coloured white? I should talk to some medical doctors. Coloured blood is just not right. I don't like anything. I can't do anything about it. But I like dancing. I like the disco. Because I left my heart in San Francisco. Yeah. Feel the heat on the street. Dance to the beat. Out of your feet. Feel the heat on the street. Dance to the beat. Out of your feet. Get down. Get down. 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 I don't like anything. Except I like Neil Diamond. Yeah. Disco. Dance. Disco. Dance. Disco.
Nation.
Not a chance. Disco. Dance. Dance out of my tree, out of my branch. I don't like it.
No,
no,
no, I don't. Never did.
I don't like it. I don't like anything, anything, anything. I don't like it.
No,
no,
no, I don't. I don't care.
I don't like it. I don't like anything.
I don't like a puppet without strings. There's a muppet in the wings, and it's saying racist things.
I won't cop that.
No way.
I don't like anything.
Video killed the racist star.
Howard
wonders what you are.
But here's on the scrap heap too.
Bit of a downer.
I don't like anything.
I can't do anything about it.
But I like dancing.
I like the disco.
Cause I left my heart in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Feel the heat on the street. Dance to the beat.
Your feet.
Feel the heat on the street. Dance to the beat. Out of your feet. I don't like it.
No,
no,
no, I don't. Never did.
I don't like it. I don't like anything. 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 I don't like it.
No,
no,
no, I don't.
I don't care. I don't like it. I don't like anything. 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 No, the whole thing is wrong and it stinks and I don't like it.
3CR celebrating 50 years.
This June we'll be asking for your donations to support 3CR.
Your donation during Radiothon keeps the station radical and enables us to give voice to our community for another year.
All donations over $2 are tax deductible. To donate, go to 3cr.org.au. Show your support by donating this June.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Did you know that 3CR first went to air in 1976? That's right, we're turning 50 this year.
On behalf of 3CR staff and committee, I have much pleasure in welcoming 3CR listeners and friends here at the station to 3CR's official opening. 3CR Community Radio Melbourne is Australia's first community radio station owned and operated by a federation of community organisations, 95 in all. 3CR has arisen out of the experience and need of groups and individuals in Melbourne, people who have and are fighting against mistreatment or neglect by the mass media, people who have, by and large, been denied effective access to the media.
You're listening to 3CR, 50 years of radical radio.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here on 3CR, and before those station IDs, we were just listening to I Don't Like It by Pauline Pantsdown. And before that, we were joined by Lucia from the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism, speaking about the rally protesting Barnaby Joyce and Pauline Hanson's fundraiser. It'll be at 5:45 p.m. this Friday at the Mooney Ponds Tram Junction.
And now we're going to hear an interview from back in 2020 from In Your Face, in which the host, James McKenzie, speaks with Adam Carr, who was a founding journalist of the Gay and Lesbian Press back in 1979 and was on the front lines reporting of the outbreak of HIV and AIDS here in so-called Melbourne, and was also involved in setting up the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. This interview was originally aired in 2020, but since we are learning a lot about the history of 3CR and activist communities decades ago, I thought it was very relevant. Anyway, here's James's conversation.
We're going back quite some way now. This is 1979. There wasn't any gay media in Melbourne at that time. There was only Campaign magazine in Sydney, which we Melbourne activists thought was terribly frivolous and full of silly gossip and stuff. So at the 5th National Homosexual Conference, which was an annual activists conference that that year was held in Melbourne, there was a meeting convened of people who thought it would be a good idea to a new serious gay activist type publication based in Melbourne. That was in June, I think, of 79, and we launched Gay Community News, very imaginative title, later that year. So it was quite an exciting venture, yes.
And what were the political issues of the time the community was concerned with?
Well, this was before homosexual law reform in Victoria, so it was still illegal for gay men to be having sex. There was quite widespread still occupational discrimination, housing discrimination, bad treatment by police. There were a number of issues that were running at that time that were quite important and that we felt weren't getting any coverage. And we also wanted the magazine to be not just reporting the news but helping to make it. We wanted to be an activist publication that actually served to help, you know, mobilise the community to make it into a real activist community and tackle these issues.
And I guess the community really embraced it.
Well, up to a point, yes. We were fairly sort of serious left-wing activists. Quite a lot of people in the community didn't like what we were producing. We had a lot of trouble with the business community, for example. We didn't carry any advertising at first because we thought advertising was, you know, commercialism and stuff. We didn't really think about how the magazine was going to be commercially viable with no advertising. But eventually we had to deal with some of those questions. And we began to run somewhat broader kind of content. But it was never, GCN was never a commercially viable enterprise. It limped along for several years, losing money, which we didn't have, until eventually we came to a crunch point about 3 years later where we had to fundamentally rethink the whole thing.
And, of course, at that time, 3 years later, HIV/AIDS had emerged as well.
Well, it came along at that exact moment when GCN was no longer viable. Now, had HIV/AIDS not happened, we might have just said, oh, well, you know, and let it fold. But we felt in that emerging crisis that it was a duty to keep a gay media in Melbourne going because it was carrying, you know, important information that people needed to have. So we had a bit of a crisis at the end of 82 leading into 83. And basically we then relaunched the publication as Outrage Magazine, which was explicitly a much broader-based magazine. It was still intended to be for both men and women, although that was increasingly a problem because the kinds of content that the gay male community were wanting to read about in the midst of the AIDS epidemic had changed pretty radically. But we survived for a year or so with that model, and that was a much more upmarket, sophisticated, you know, we had colour printing and what have you. We did succeed in getting some money from the Victorian government, from a thing called the Community Cooperative Development Program. We turned ourselves into a cooperative, gay publications cooperative, and we applied for a grant to employ staff and to rent an office as a cooperative, which we got. And so Danny Videz was then appointed as editor and I was appointed as assistant editor, and Merrily Moss was the other assistant editor. So we had a staff of three and we had an office in John Curtin House in the city. So it was a much more sophisticated enterprise. It still didn't make money. We did carry advertising, but it was never... It still limped along economically, but it survived. And during that period, 83, 84, 5, we were, in fact, probably the most important news outlet on the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Australia. Our circulation did go up because of that. So it was, in a purely commercial sense, it was a good thing. But, of course, it also, some terrible things were happening in the community as well.
What were some of those memorable stories that you worked on?
Well, we broke... most of the news about the developing AIDS crisis as it happened, usually well in advance of what the mainstream media was doing, because we had access to overseas media. I mean, in the days obviously before the internet, we had to wait for things to arrive by post, but we were still getting the New York Native and the Bay Area Reporter and other gay press from the United States who were carrying what was going on with AIDS there, and we could see what was coming. We could see it was going to come to Australia, and we ran a lot of quite important news on that. There was also the ongoing campaigns for gay law reform. We'd achieved it in Victoria in 1981, but it took a long struggle to get it in New South Wales, in Queensland, in Tasmania. So GCN had been a specifically Melbourne paper, whereas Outrage was supposed to be a national magazine. So we broadened our coverage interstate, although we never really became a major force in the Sydney community. They still preferred to read the local press, which is not surprising. But we certainly did get a reputation for serious news coverage and serious political commentary, for which there was a market, although it wasn't really a big enough market for us to ever be really commercially successful. But in the midst of that crisis, we thought it was, you know, important that we carry on. So we did.
What was it like for you as a journalist reporting on so many people dying in the community?
Yeah, it was very tough, not just for me, but for everybody, because we're also, of course, also involved in the activist response as well. When the Victorian AIDS Council was set up in 83 and 84, I was heavily involved in that. I was doing media work for VAC and sort of swapping backwards and forwards between my journalist hat and my activist hat, which wasn't very good practice, but it was necessary at the time. I mean, sometimes I wrote articles about myself in the third person because it was just inevitable that we would do that. But it was very stressful because this crisis was going on around us. It was affecting everybody we knew. People were getting sick. And at this point, of course, nobody knew who had the virus. This was before the antibody test was available, and there was no treatment for AIDS. People got sick. They went into hospital and they died. So it was a very, very rough period. In some ways, being a journalist gave you some sense of control, though. I found, you know, doing both activist work and journalistic work sort of therapeutic in a sense. It was a good way. It was better than sitting around doing nothing and fretting about what was happening.
So what were some of the challenges in setting up a Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre? I imagine getting government funding was a real challenge.
It was at first, yes, because the state government took some persuading, firstly, that this was a real crisis, and secondly, that the correct way to respond to it was to give money to, you know, a self-appointed committee of homosexuals who said, give us the money and we'll do the job. But they did come around because it became obvious, particularly after Neil Blewett, the federal health minister, went to the United States and saw what was happening in San Francisco and in New York and came back and said, this is a real crisis. Thousands of people are going to die unless we get a grip on what is happening. And the best way to do it is to support the communities that are most directly affected and let them do the prevention education work. And when they saw the kind of material that we needed to produce, you know, material that talked about condoms and talked about anal sex and talked about needle sharing and talked about subjects that they found they didn't know anything about and didn't like the look of, it was much better to give us the money and let us produce this material than have the government try and do it themselves. And they did eventually. The Victorian government, when David White was health minister, did accept that model. And we were directly funded. The Victorian AIDS Council was directly funded to do that educational work, and eventually also the Gay Men's Health Centre was set up as a vehicle to allow us to offer, you know, counselling and clinical services directly to the gay community through our own facilities, which was a different model to one they pursued in Sydney, where they set up the Albion Street Centre as a government clinic, which we didn't want. We didn't want a government clinic in Victoria. We wanted to run it ourselves. And it also meant that both the government and the AIDS Council spent quite a lot of money advertising in the gay media, so that made Outrage's finances considerably better. So Outrage was able to carry on. And we tried not to let AIDS completely take it over, but it was always a struggle because there was just so much going on. We did try and keep some other issues running, but it was a very challenging time for all of us in every sense.
So tell us about some of the safe sex campaigns that the AIDS Council developed in those early days. Can you remember some of them?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, we had a particularly good educational team, Ron Thiel, Bruce Parnell, Marcus O'Donnell, other people, all of whom are still around. And some of the lessons that we learned then are now having to be relearned now because of the COVID epidemic. It's not the same, but there are some similarities, and some of these same lessons are having to be learned over again. We needed to talk to people in their own language. We needed to speak to gay men in language that they understood and pitch the material so that it wasn't the government telling them what to do, but it was a community-based response. This is what we have decided as a community that we need to do, which is quite a different approach from the sort of traditional public health approach that some of the doctors wanted to use, which was to test everybody and quarantine people and close venues and order people not to do this and not to do that. And we argued that would not work. This was a community that was used to being stigmatized, that was used to being semi-underground. They would simply not respond to orders from government about what we needed to do. The messages had to be seen to be coming from the community itself. And that was why it was important that they fund us. And we promoted things like condom use for anal sex. We promoted, we used all the gay sex venues you know, the saunas and the sex clubs. We held seminars, we held meetings, we held demonstrations of how to put on a condom, which, you know, government doctors could never have done. It was only us that could do that. We had the Safe Sex Sisters, which was a group of gay men who got around in sort of nurse drag and handed out condoms and were very funny and put on shows. So we used all the existing vehicles, all the existing, you know, channels of the gay community, gay male community, to get this message out, not just to self-identified gay men, but also men who had sex with men who didn't identify as gay. So we had a big Beats program. We put up stickers and messages and phone numbers in all the Beats around Melbourne so that people, men who were looking for sex but who didn't think of themselves as gay, who didn't think of themselves as part of the gay community, would still be getting these messages. And the result was that we drove down the number of HIV infections pretty radically, and no doubt at all that we saved thousands of lives through that campaign. And it was a very successful campaign, which was widely copied in other parts of the world.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan.
Welcome to Rainbows Don't Fade with Age on Radio 3CR.
Welcome to Trans Creator Radio.
Where history's queer futures is an audio journey into the
Trans Day of Audibility, a day for us to be heard and not seen.
3CR, your station, your voice.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That was a part of a conversation that James McKenzie, host of the In Your Face show, had with Adam Carr, who's a founding journalist of the Gay and Lesbian Press back in 1979, and they were speaking about reporting on the outbreak of HIV and AIDS here in so-called Melbourne back in the early 80s. You can hear the rest of that conversation at 3cr.org.au/ In Your Face, and we'll put the link to it in the notes of the podcast we published for the show. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That song was, of course, Confusion from Blade, the movie from the late 90s.
The movie Blade.
And, yeah, we're playing it for a very specific reason, and then it ties into this interview that we're now doing about this event called the Blood Rave. We're joined in the studio by Celeste and over the phone by Gia, who are two organizers of this event from the organization known as Amplexus, a vision of ritualistic queer celebrations that could seamlessly blend gritty, ostentatious themes with an artistic menagerie and an unshakable culture of community care. That's such a beautiful bio. Yeah, and they're here to tell us about the event that they're organizing called Blood Rave, which is obviously based off of Blade. Good morning, Gia and Celeste.
Good morning.
Hi.
So do y'all maybe first want to start by telling us about Implexus? Obviously, this is your first event that you have organized together as a group. Is it just the two of you?
Yeah, it's just the two of us organizing it.
Wow. That's a lot of effort. So talk to us about Implexus. Like, what's the... Obviously, we mentioned that it's a vision. But yeah, maybe you can go further into that.
Yeah, absolutely. For everyone who doesn't know, my name is Gia. My pronouns are she, they. And Implexus has been something that I've been thinking about for quite a while. Originally, it was going to be flying under a different name, Bitch Meat Productions, but we decided to change that relatively last minute because as Celeste and I were talking a few months ago about doing Blood Rave and like how we're going to organize it, I really started to realize that something that often can be missed in events throughout the city, especially like raves and like club nights and sort of more like hard-hitting sort of party environments, is often there's not a huge amount of accessibility and consideration for the patrons put into the event in terms of like how they're going to be looked after, how they're going to be catered to make the event like have longevity for them so that they can rock up and be like fairly sustained and not leave feeling completely exhausted, people getting sick, you know, for reasons that could have been avoided, and generally having like a wanting to create a culture around, you know, alcohol and other substance usage that isn't just about like going completely over the top as a way just to be able to like find the event accessible and comfortable, but instead arriving to a community and culture where you feel much more integrated and you feel that you're not just attending an event, but really part of this sort of breathing entity and the event, because an event can't exist without the people who were there, you know, on the dance floor and in the dark corners making conversation and building the culture in these places. So we wanted to make Implexus a feel like an embrace, feel like you are welcomed into the arms of a large thriving entity that you are now integrated within, and that your health and safety is really built into it in a way that is palpable.
Yeah, I think it's super important to be able to embed, and super special as well to be able to embed community care into events such as this, right?
And it's really achievable. It's really achievable as well. Celeste and I both have, like, I think at this point, probably like a combined effort of like 2 decades worth of experience of doing events under our belt. And yeah, over that course of time, I think we've both just sort of really been learning that it's not that difficult to make events more accessible for more of our community, and to bridge those gaps that hinder people from accessing their own community, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you find like working together as Implexus? How is that different from your organizing experiences?
Well, I think for me, I've worked with a couple of different events groups that have been where I've learned a lot about how to make things more and more accessible. And I think the difference now with Celeste and I is that we're the next layer that we're adding on top of it is also making event organizing accessible for the organizers themselves, like, and sustainable for the organizers themselves. And I think for me, I'm learning a lot about, like, taking a bit of a slower pace with the organizing and maybe, like, being a little bit kinder to ourselves as organizers. There can be, I'm sure all the event organizers out there can attest to how much pressure it, like, how easy it is to put pressure on yourself to be delivering, like, the best event possible. And yeah, because it's just the two of us this time. Yeah, for me, I'm really learning about, you know, what the realistic limits are of what we can achieve. And honestly, I'm really impressed with how far we've come with just two people. Celeste is really great to work with, and I'll let them sort of maybe add to that if they'd like to.
Yeah, I mean, the process has been really fun, actually, and I feel like that's kind of been our ethos. We're like, how can we create an event where people actually just come and have a good time? And I feel like we've built that ethos and philosophy into how we run the event together. So when we have meetings, it's like, we'll sit down, we'll cook together, we'll eat food together, we'll talk about our week, we'll be like, how are you, what's happening? And we make sure that we, like, look after each other while we're doing this, and we have a lot of fun while we're doing it as well. And we're like, we're going out on a poster run, and, like, we're listening to music, and we're having a drink, and we're having check-ins with each other. And yeah, I think we've just been focused on how do we actually enjoy the experience as event organizers as well, so we're not just, like, burnt out and stressed, and then that translates into the event. And because that's translated through, I'm just really excited to be at the party, like, promoting the party, putting posters around, talking to people. I'm like, I just want to be there. Like, I want to go there now, you know? I want to be in a room with, like, sick DJs full of, like, beautiful queer people dancing in a space that feels, like, welcoming and inviting as well as sick. Like, I literally just want to be at Blood Rave.
Me too.
You know, and we're, like, planning the party. We're like, we just want to be there. And we're like, let's just make the kind of party that we want to go to. And yeah, we've both been putting on events for 2 decades, and we both also go to events. Like, I work in a nightclub called Miscellanea, and I'm there at the club all the time. Both of us are, like, go to a lot of queer events. We go to events at Pony Club. I go to Hanky. Like, we're both in the community going to events all the time. And we're like, let's make the kind of event that we want to be at. And so doing our marketing, it's like, we're not trying to sell a product to people. We're trying to share an experience. And I think that's translating, you know. It's like, I'm like, to all the people I know that want to come, I'm like, hey, I want you to come because this party's going to be amazing. And I actually just genuinely want to share this experience with you.
That's beautiful. So maybe y'all would like to talk about what's happening on the night itself and when it is.
Oh my god.
Yes, what is happening? Well, first of all, it's on June 20, which is not this Saturday, but the Saturday after. I guess firstly, the concept is inspired by the opening scene of the movie Blade, where there's blood raining down from the ceiling, and that's kind of where the aesthetic for kind of all of our graphics come from too. It's very, like, sleek 90s sexy vampire vibes. Yeah, Gigi, do you want to talk more about the concept for Blood Rave?
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, we all love that opening scene from Blade where they're at this rave. It's like in this fucking meat locker kind of it's like through the back door of a meat locker. It's incredible. But something about that scene that's often sort of irked me a little bit is that all these vampires in a lot of, like, film and TV are so often portrayed as, like, quite fascist, quite elitist. They're all like, oh, we're the superior race, darling. We have a supreme leader, which, you know, when vampires do it, okay, admittedly hot, awesome. I'll give them that. But lately, like, yeah, throughout this year, when we were thinking about Blood Rave, it sort of clicked to me that in every sort of, like, fascist regime, there's always queer punks. Always. They're always there in the underground doing their own raves. And I was like, oh, my God. Okay, we've got the fascist vampires portrayed in Blade, but there would totally be, like, queer underground punk vampires who are throwing raves that aren't just vampires. There's lycans, we got werewolves, we got horrible, disturbing goblins and demons. So that's where, you know, Blood Rave that we're doing is like a queer punk reimagining of that scene. Unfortunately, there will be no blood spurting down from the ceiling. We unfortunately have a budget of $0, so we can't make it happen this time. But
you could bring your own blood, you know, not like fake blood.
BYO blood.
Yeah, BYO blood.
But on the night, we've got some like beautiful performers who, one of which is coming from interstate, and a few performers who have performed internationally, doing like beautiful, like sexy dance performances. We've got like my friend Lion, who if you haven't heard of, he does this incredible like Ethiopian queer hyper pop. Like, I'm talking full Britney Mike diva on stage, like big baddie pop diva energy. You've got to see Lion live. It is actually a ridiculous performance. And then Demon Pussy, which is Celeste and I DJing, being the main dance floor for the evening. It's so funny. The second time Celeste and I met, I can't remember how we started talking about it, but I think Celeste just mentioned the name Demon Pussy, and then I was like, whoa, that sounds like an awesome DJ fucking back-to-back scenario. And then that's literally how Blood Rave happened, is we just got talking and we were like, we need an event to DJ at. And I was like, let's make one then.
And you organized an event for you both to headline.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we were like, well, we really want to DJ together under Demon Pussy. And we were like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just throw our own gig, book ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's just go.
You're going to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So, obviously, it's happening on June 20th.
Yes.
We've only got a few minutes left of the interview. So, I'll just like remind people it's happening on June 20th. Like what time, how can people find tickets, all of this stuff?
So it's at a secret location in Coburg, and to get the address for the party, you have to buy a ticket online, and you can buy tickets online at our website, at plexusliberatio.org. That's AMPLEXUSLIBERATIO.org.
It's a very cool looking website.
Thank you. I made it.
Wow.
And we also have an Instagram, which maybe, I don't know, would you be able to post our Instagram?
We can link both the link to the tickets and your Instagram and the podcast that we publish. Absolutely.
That would be amazing. And thank you to everyone who's bought tickets so far. We've already sold half of our pre-sales, which is pretty amazing 2 weeks out. June. Oh, the time. We haven't said the time. So it starts at 7 p.m. and it goes till midnight. We actually kind of wanted to make something like nice and early so people can like come down. Yeah. Or
such
just
as
like,
myself.
Yeah. So it's like you can go out and party and you don't have to be like, oh, I don't have like the capacity to be out till like 5 a.m. and like totally rinse myself. It's like you can just come down at 7. The performances are going to be on at 9. It'll be wrapped up by 12. So, you know, we'll be in bed by like 1 a.m.
Beautiful. We've just got a few moments left of the interview. Is there anything else that y'all wanted to add?
I just wanted to say that what Celeste and I are doing or like trying to do is nothing new.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many amazing event organizers out there who do such incredible work to help make their events more accessible. Things like clean air, sanitizing stations, choosing a venue that's like spacious and aerated, that's like, you know, bringing wheelchair ramps and things like this. And I just want to do a shout out to all the event organizers out there who really try to prioritize community care. It's really hard. A lot of us are doing this with basically no budget at all. And I'm so blessed to be part of a community that prioritizes community care. And I think the future for raves and the future for club nights is one that tries to make sure that we can all access it as best as we can, without getting sick, without getting injured, and with remembering to love each other along the way. So shout out to all the organizers out there. Y'all are keeping it real.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Celeste and Gia. And Yeah, good luck with the event. We'll see you there.
Awesome. Thank you, thank you we'll so much, there. Rob.
Thank you.
We love
you.
Thanks for having us.
Ciao. Thank you.
That was Celeste and Gia, who are part of the Amplexus organizing group, which are organizing the event called Blood Rave, happening on June 20th at a secret location in Coburg. And we will put the links to both the website that they've created and their Instagram in the podcast notes that we publish. Stay tuned.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be!
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire.
Did you know that each donation over $2 you make to 3CR's Radiothon is tax deductible? That means that when you're doing your tax return business, you can claim your 3CR donation as a legitimate tax deduction. To make a pledge to this year's Radiothon, call the station on 9419 8377 or donate online at 3cr.org.au/donate.
3CR celebrating 50 years.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR 855 AM. Now we're going to be joined by Jake, and they'll be speaking to us about data centres in NAM and Australia. Good morning.
Morning, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
No worries. How are you?
Good, thanks. I'm tired.
Yeah, the mornings. Monday mornings is never... I still haven't gotten used to it. I've been doing this.
The worst day of the week.
Yeah. Would you want to start off by telling me about the upcoming rally that's happening this week, protesting new data centres?
So by the way, just the introduction, my name is Jacob Delphin. So I'm the organiser of an upcoming rally regarding the rapid expansion of data centres that's currently happening across Australia. I just wanted to be clear, for me personally, this isn't necessarily about opposing technology or AI. It's more just about ensuring that the community has a voice in decisions that affect them. As it comes to the rally is going to be held out the front of the State Library on Saturday the 13th of June at about 11:30 in the morning. You can also find our event on Facebook. It's titled Who Controls Our Data? Melbourne Community Rally. It's just for anyone interested in learning more about the issue, whether or not you want to ask questions, express different views. Everyone's welcome to attend. We do have a range of different speakers. They're all from different backgrounds and different perspectives. So regardless of where people stand on the issue, I do think it's important that Australians remain engaged in the decisions that will shape our community and also our infrastructure and Australia's future digital landscape.
Mm. For listeners who don't know, what are data centres?
So data centres, there's already currently hundreds of data centres all across Australia. I'm aware that they're not necessarily a new thing. And there's also many more that are planned or under construction as well.
Mm.
Uh, what's happened is demand has increased significantly due to data systems. Data centers basically store, like, we have cloud computing, artificial intelligence, streaming services, and growing digital infrastructure needs. So data centers take care of all of that.
And I heard that they're planning on building a new one in the west of Nam. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yes. So one of the projects that's attracted quite a significant amount of attention in the community and with people that I've been talking to is the proposed expansion of the data center infrastructure, especially in Melbourne's west. There's definitely a couple that are proposed all across Melbourne. Residents and community groups and different people that I've spoken to have definitely raised their concerns about the different issues like electricity consumption, water usage as well, and also like industrialization of the local areas. We've also heard there's a lot of noise impacts and also obviously also just broader environmental concerns.
Yeah, I saw in the US there's been a lot of protests about the effects data centers have on the surrounding local communities with water quality and noise pollution and stuff like that. Can you tell me a bit more about the environmental impacts that they have on the surrounding communities?
So data centers do require substantial amounts of electricity and water as well. The water is required to cool down the servers. And they can't use salt water. They have to use fresh water because it's corrosive otherwise. So it depends on the design and the location, really. But I think what's one of the biggest issues is they really do, they can potentially place pressure on like local power grids. And obviously they consume significant resources. I was just reading in bed before about how in Ireland, the data centers now use 20% of all their electricity. So I think a lot of critics are arguing that obviously, as Australia pursues like emission target reductions and the politicians are talking about net zero, I think it's important to consider the environmental footprint of the current rapid expanding digital infrastructure that they're pushing for us. There's a lot of supporters and people within the community that I've spoken to, and they're pointing out that newer facilities can be more efficient. And it would probably be a good idea if we're going to continue with data expansion. We should utilize like renewable energy sources rather than the system that we currently have set up.
And are there, like, is it possible for there to be ways of having data centers that are less environmentally impactful? Are there ways to make it more sustainable with maybe renewable energy or...
I'm not an expert, but I definitely think if we were to seek more ways to utilize renewable energy for stuff like this, but I think that's a question for the public and for the politicians who are organizing all this, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And who were the speakers on at this rally?
So this was just a rally that I decided to throw together myself. But so far we've got a couple people lined up. We have just last night, I've got a couple people from all different backgrounds and perspectives, I guess. So we're looking at having some Green senators attend and speak. We've got Sonia Semmons, who is running for government, and she'd like to come and talk. And I think we should have David Shoebridge. I'm just getting back to him and confirming that either today or tomorrow, but we're supposed to have him lined up as well.
Amazing. And would you be able to remind listeners on when and where this rally will be?
Yep. So the rally will be out the front of the State Library on Saturday the 13th, this Saturday, at about 11:30 a.m. If you come early or late, it doesn't matter. I'll be there from 11 just setting up and hoping everything runs smoothly. Like I said, you can also find our event on Facebook. It's titled Who Controls Our Data? Melbourne Community Rally. And basically, the rally is just for anyone interested in either you want to learn more about the issue, if you wanted to come and ask some questions, or just express your views and listen to other people who are also expressing their views. Like I said, we have a range of different speakers from all different backgrounds and perspectives. Like, we've covered environmental concerns, privacy concerns, people that just live near the data centers that we currently have that are already having issues.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the show, and I'm excited to learn lots at the rally on Saturday.
Yes, it should be good. Anyone's welcome to attend. I hope anyone who's interested either shows up, or if you don't want to show up or you're not free, feel free to go on the event and just click interested, because whatever happens after this, whatever route we decide to go down, there'll be more information that I'll be continuously posting on the Facebook event.
Great. Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thank you. And that was Jake speaking on the upcoming rally this Saturday at 11:30 at the State Library on the growing data centres in NAM and across so-called Australia. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
The Commons Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates, and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. It is 27 minutes past 8 on the 8th of June, which means we've only got a few moments left of the show. Mm-hmm. Just a quick reminder that next week's show... is our Radiothon special. It's our huge Radiothon special, so it's going to look very different. And hopefully everybody's ready to have a good time and help keep 3CR alive for another year.
Mm-hmm.
Super special to be here for yet another year. And
I'm wearing last year's Radiothon
and
hoodie.
Anna's wearing last year's Radiothon hoodie. I'm sure you can check out the latest one if you come into the station on Smith Street.
And stay tuned across the week, because all the shows will be having their Radiothon this week as well.
How exciting.
So exciting.
It's so amazing to be a part of a community radio show. You know, I was thinking it before when we were playing Tessa's segment, how nice it was that community, it's just a communal show.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to emphasize the community in the community radio. And mm-hmm. what a beautiful thing is that we don't take corporate sponsors or beholden to any government figures like that, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully we can have a good time next week on next week's Radiothon. Before we get out of here, we'll just remind listeners what happened on today's show as per usual. So we began the show with a segment provided to us by Tessa from the Out of the Blue show about the Guildford Big Tree Community Day. Then we were joined by Lucia from CARF, aka the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism, talking about protesting against a fundraiser for Barnaby Joyce and Pauline Hanson's fundraiser this Friday, 5:45 p.m. at the Mooney Ponds Tram Junction is where the protest will begin. Following that, we heard James McKenzie speak with Adam Carr about being on the front lines of reporting on the outbreak of HIV and AIDS here in so-called Melbourne in 1979. That interview took place in 2020. We also spoke with Gian and Celeste from Amplexus, who have organized the upcoming event known as Blood Rave, which is a sexy 90s vampire-themed rave happening on June 20th. And finally, we heard from Jake talking to us about why we should protest against data centers, especially with the announcement of this latest huge one in the west of so-called Melbourne. And with that, we'll see you next week and stay tuned for Women on the Line.
Bye.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.